Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Paco Romain.
And I'm George Chen.
And today on SupDoc, we are recapping the classic 2008 documentary Anvil, The Story of Anvil, directed by Sasha Gervasi, who is a teenage fan and Anvil roadie. This doc is tragic, brilliant, and hilarious, and as close to the real-life Spinal Tap as possible, and even involves a player named Rob Reiner.
Canadian heavy metal band Anvil delivered an influential 1982 album that inspired the likes of Anthrax and Metallica. Then they dropped off the map and spent decades toiling in obscurity. The doc centers around guitarist Steve Lipskudlow and drummer Rob Reiner as they stumble through a European tour and reflect on failure, friendship, resilience, and following an impossible dream.
Anvil, the story of Anvil, has a 98% rating on Rotten Tomatoes and should be on everyone's best of documentary list. It's currently streaming on Amazon Prime. And now here's our take on Anvil, the story of Anvil.
Since where we learned how to play.
We're like brothers.
We were just innocent kids. We didn't really know what we were doing.
My name is Tiziana Rigoni, manager at Anvil.
It looks like she's booked us a tour. England, Belgium, Germany. This is going to be the biggest tour I've done in 20 years.
Given your reputation, you should be playing in front of 1,000 people every night. And you are not.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
All right, so George, I am extremely excited to be talking about this documentary today. I love this documentary.
Yeah, it's really good, and I'd never seen it before. It's been brought up. I had someone who said that they wanted to do this show, and this is a movie they wanted to do. Still hadn't seen it, and then finally watched it, just finished it right before we got on this call, and yeah, great movie. Not as much of a parody, or not parody, not as much of a farce or anything as I thought it was going to be. Really pretty sincere movie. I guess I didn't read enough reviews. I could have thought it was going to be just kind of like, you know, a little bit of like a goofy Canadians, you know?
Oh,
like new weird Canada, like just like, you know, like the Rick Moranis and Dave Thomas brothers, but metalheads. But yeah. No, it's pretty sincere.
I think that's why it still holds up today, and it took the world by storm when it came out in 2008. I mean, this doc was huge. I saw it first on Netflix, and I could not tell for maybe the first half hour if it was a spoof or not.
Right, like an American Vandal type thing.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Which, by the way, if people haven't seen American Vandal, the first season is amazing.
Did not get very far into season two. Did you ever finish season two?
No, it was season one, it got so good. Too cute.
Season one's like it's so perfect.
It's so perfect. Yeah. It's so good. And I met those guys at a Sketchfest after party, and I was like, just
The actors.
The actors in that, yeah. I was cheesing out. I like the history, the PE.
Ryan Flanagan? Yeah,
Ryan Flanagan and the other guy that was kind of the heavy in it. And I was just like, oh, man, I loved it. But Anvil has always been one of my all-time favorite docs. And it's like, it's such a powerful, funny, moving, sincere movie. It's kind of like some kind of monster's younger brother. You know?
Yeah, it's like the stakes are like the opposite of some kind of monster in a way. But yeah, they're definitely good companion pieces to each other. I think I was also thinking back to American Movie, right? It's got a similar, is it David and Goliath story? It's just like, it's very similar to American Movie. It's like sort of like people, and like Toronto's a big city, so it wasn't as like, I thought it was going to be a little bit more of like a slice of like a weird, you know, like, I don't know. I mean, I've also only been to like Vancouver and Calgary. I can't say a lot about the rest of Canada, but like Toronto is like a major metropolitan city, but they're just kind of like in this, there is a whole music industry in Canada. Like this thing that like they kind of got screwed because they were Canadian. I'm like, maybe that was true in like 1984, but Toronto is like the New York of Canada, as far as I know. So it's strange that it didn't really work out for them. There seemed to be a lot of issues with their first record label, like Attic Records, which they didn't really get into the details of, but you hear any story about a band in the late 70s or through the 80s, it's usually got a bad record label story attached to it.
The record label business hasn't changed since day fucking one. I swear to God, the first person to like be created to construct the music industry was like, I'm going to fuck over everybody. That's the model I'm going to use.
Well, you know,
like
the starting of this thing is just like the analogy is like they're on tour in Japan with, is it the Scorpions, Bon Jovi, and
Whitesnake.
And they're like, all those three bands went on to be huge. And then there was Anvil, who had like the 7 p.m. slot. I'm just like, I've been in the 7 p.m. slot a lot. I've been like, in my whole career has been the 7 p.m. slot. I'm like, wow, this is like, they keep holding, like, I kind of get it, right? They were like, they dropped out of high school, right? To do this, basically, is what it sounds like. Lips and Rob, at least Lips did. So, yeah, like, they got that taste. It's like the child actor phenomenon.
Right.
Did you ever see this? I'm just got so many digressions, but did you ever see this thing where the guy who played Bud Bundy, David Faustino, he had this like web series with Corin Nemec, who played Parker Lewis Can't Lose. And it was about them. It was like a web series, like kind of sitcom about these two like adult losers who were child actors.
Wow. That hits close to home.
Yeah.
Yeah, that David Faustino. Yeah, what happened?
Yeah, he tried to have a rap career, I think, is part of it. Yeah. Oh,
sure. That makes sense. That's a lateral move for sure. Yeah, Anvil is in that same vein of like best friends with big dreams who try to conquer it all, and it just doesn't quite happen until someone makes a documentary about them. You know, well, thank God for that.
And I dug a little bit more into it. The guy who made the documentary, that's a really interesting... there's a really interesting story. Like you did a little bit of research on that, right? I didn't watch the interview. What would the interview with him talk about?
The interview I saw with him, they basically say like, how did you get involved? And he tells the story of when he was 13, he went to an Anvil show and went up to Robbo, and was like, you're the best drummer I've ever seen in my life. You're my hero. And you're number one fan in England, and he became a roadie with them when he was like 15. He was a roadie and went all over like three different countries, and ended up being like the drum tech for Rob. And then he moved to LA to go to film school and had kind of forgotten about them. And 25 years later, he was like, you know, I kind of wonder what. So he went on their website and emailed them and was like, hey, you know, just wondering whatever happened to you guys. And I guess Lips hit him back like an hour later and was like, hey, I remember you, you know, and that's kind of how it started.
Did they have a falling out? I read somewhere that there was a falling out. Maybe that was, it was not addressed. I don't know.
He doesn't mention that in the interview.
Well, because he's promoting it at that point. Yeah, that makes sense. That guy is Sacha Gervasi. Ended up being super successful screenwriter. Like, he wrote...
And journalist.
Yeah, journalist, screenwriter. He wrote that Spielberg movie, The Terminal. And he also... This was his only documentary I think he's done. Obviously, he was a journalist. He has, like, you know, a lot of other nonfiction work he's done as a writer. But then the other thing when I Googled him that came up is he is the father of... a child with Jerry Holloway, a.k.a. Ginger Spice.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's like the number one thing. I think the number two thing is, after Anvil, is that father of child with Jerry Holloway, a.k.a. Ginger Spice. And it's like, huh. Yeah. Anyway, you can look it up yourself. It's like gossip from 2006. Who cares, right?
All right.
Seems like very successful now.
He did My Dinner with Hervé,
right,
which is based on him and his night with Hervé Villechev, the dwarf from the famous TV show
Fantasy Island.
Fantasy Island. Yeah. And I watched it not that long ago.
Oh, you did?
I didn't know. Yeah.
How is it?
I didn't even know there. It's horrible.
Oh.
It's horrible. It's horrible.
I really hope he's not listening.
Well, I'm sorry. I mean, this is creative critiquing.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
It's almost unwatchable.
Oh.
I love Peter Dinklage.
Yeah, he's great.
That's why I want. Yeah, and I've always been. I remember hearing, maybe I read a piece about Hervé, about like he was a crazy party.
Yeah.
He was just like Dionysus times a million. Mm-hmm. Like that was his thing. And so I was kind of interested, but it was fairly horrible.
Oh, into HBO, right?
HBO. Sorry.
I'm still curious about that type of format, like a movie about a guy who interviews a more famous guy. Like, did you see End of the Tour, that David Foster Wallace?
I did.
Kind of reminds me of like that format. It's such a weird thing about, like, you know, just injecting yourself into the story.
Again. Twice. Yeah. Well, and I enjoyed End of the Tour, actually.
Yeah. I thought it was well done.
I like David Foster Wallace. I've been a fan for a long time, and I enjoyed that.
I can't say I've ever read his big work,
Infinite Jest.
Did you read it?
Yeah, sure. Oh. A few times.
Yeah, you have. That's right. I forget that you have time to do things. I'm like,
not everyone has a job.
I can barely read the short story, the essays, the nonfiction essays I have of his. I've like read about a third of that one. Supposedly fun thing I'll never do again. Has someone made a good documentary about David Foster Wallace? I don't know if anyone has
a good documentary
about David Foster
Wallace. Oh, I don't
know. They have this fictional version with Jesse Eisenberg and of all people, the guy from Freaks and Geeks playing David Foster Wallace.
It's good. I liked it. I hesitated watching it for quite a while, but I have a lot of time on my hands. And the other night I was like, screw it. I'll watch it. And I ended up enjoying it, but you know, it's on Netflix. If you guys want to check it out, let us know how you feel about it. Tweet at us, give us something on the old social media. However, let's dovetail back into Anvil. Metal on metal. Did you ever hear? Have you ever heard of Anvil before this doc?
No, I only heard about them because of this documentary, I think.
Right.
And I think that I got the impression it was sort of like the music wasn't necessarily good. So I didn't like pursue it. And also, it's not really the era of metal I particularly like. But having watched it, I'm like, I can see this is always a story, right? Someone's just as good as someone else, and something just doesn't click together, and they're kind of left in the dust. I mean,
what is it? What is that though? What is the glue? What is the sinew of success, if you will, sir? Like, what it fascinates me and frustrates the hell out of me.
Yeah, I mean, like if you were Anvil's manager in like 2000.
That would be
two or something, like what could they have done differently, right? It's like kind of hard to really know. And I mean, I feel like I was working in the music industry around the time that this was made. I was working at an independent record label, and we had a lot of bands that were probably in a very similar boat where, like, there's just like they had some kind of success when they were like 20, and then they were like, you know, in their 40s, right. 50s, trying to
can
stage
you tell
a
us
comeback.
What label is?
I can tell you. I'm not going to name any bands independently, but you can look at the roster and just kind of get the overall sense, which is I worked for Alternative Tentacles. It was Jelly Biafra of the Dead Kennedys label. And yeah, there was like just some newer bands, but there were also a lot of bands that were just like kind of trying to stage a comeback like 25 years after they first formed and stuff like that. So it was just a lot. It was just a lot of like this felt familiar, but I kind of identified with what they were going through, and also identified with all the A&R people that were like, well, thank you for the CD. You know, I could see all the sides of it.
See, I did that. I was A&R at a record label. So I was that guy. I remember people walking in with demos when I worked at Ohm Records, not so much at Ubiquity Records because those guys were assholes, but at Ohm Records, it was a much more loving place, and people would come in with demos all the time.
But like just no one had been doing it. Like Ohm did a lot of like, what, like trance music and like dance music?
It's dance, up-tempo, very house oriented, like yeah. Cascade. I worked with Cascade's my buddy. We worked together there. Now he's a gigantic DJ. But
no one had been doing house music for 30 years and just came in with a CD, though, right? That would have been something. Yeah,
that would have been something. However, at Ubiquity, that didn't happen. Where people, because we did like Q-bop and Latin jazz and you know that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But anyways, but it is true about like you listen to one track, man. And if you're not feeling it and it doesn't have the it factor, then it just goes on the other pile, you know?
Yeah.
And there's a whole other pile to go through.
Yeah. And even the stuff that gets accepted, like the hit rate of music is very bad. I mean, it's sort of like it's very much a gambler's sport, I believe. And I'm saying this someone who like was deep in it for a long time and is like sort of dipping my toes back into it. I'm actually going to put out some new music by some friends bands and so I'm like watching this again and just being reminded like, oh man, there's like this is like you really kind of just have to like this for the sake of doing it because there's
that's
like,
what all art should be though. No one gets into art for the right reasons, it never seems, or at least like that's a very broad stroke, but I mean like as far as like comedy, acting, music, people get in to be rich and famous. And if you do that, you're fucked. You're completely screwed.
Yeah.
If that's your end game.
No, I mean, I think you have to like appreciate like process to really like be able to tolerate any of this stuff. Like if you can't handle process, then you're just going to be because there's no guarantee of anything. Even these like sort of newer young stars that are like even like on the indie level, it's like someone whose father was like the head of A&R at like some record label or something, right? There's someone who's like got like a lot of juice behind them. That doesn't even guarantee things are going to hit. So
no, it gets you into the door quicker, but you never know. But then once you get into the door, you have to deal with shitty managers, horrible promoters, bandmates that suck, audiences that don't show up, you know?
Oh man. We both know a lot of that from both music and comedy. So, speaking of shitty promoters, I think we should play this clip. Sorry, it's not really in English.
Are you the guy that runs this club?
No, I'm not the owner.
Who's the guy that's supposed to pay me?
To pay you? I think it's the boss of this club.
Yeah, where is he?
And it's the guy in the red coat.
What's going on here, buddy? That's nice. I guess he figures if he gives me a bit of goulash, I'll forget about it.
He's not paying us?
No, we're not getting fucking paid. Where's the fucking club owner?
You are too late.
If I was too late, I wouldn't have fucking played, pal. You're gonna fucking pay me.
Most people goes away.
Most of people goes away.
I did my work. I want to get paid.
Sorry. Nobody call me. I am on the road.
You should have told us you weren't paying us before we fucking played.
You
fucking piece of shit.
You fucking pay me.
You're gonna fuck us on the road.
I'm gonna fucking kick your fucking teeth.
I'm crazy, man.
Yeah, I am fucking crazy. I just worked my ass off and you won't fucking pay me. You're a motherfucker.
Paco, you ever toured Europe?
Never. Never even.
Here's what my first red flag was when she sends Lips the email of the itinerary, and it's got a lot of open dates and just a couple of red dates, and only a few of them say confirmed next to them. And he's like, yeah, it's gonna be €1,500 a show. I'm like, okay, we'll see. We shall see if that is what happens.
Well, you know, in this the interview that I listened to with the director, Sasha, he talks about Lips' naivete that he still has today, you know, like kind of just way too trusting and way too naive. And it's almost like, well, whose fault is that? Is it the tour manager for setting up like this false hopes, or is it the band that just kind of blindly follows?
I think it's the Canadian school system. I think that's really the main difference. Like, if you think of the other bands that made it and them, it's not that Canada doesn't have the industry. It's that, like, they, like, even the degree of, like, both of those guys are still homeowners. Like, that wouldn't happen for an American musician at that age, for sure. It all worked out. Like, I think there's maybe, like, that trusting nature. And I didn't really think about that while we were watching it, but now in retrospect, I'm like, yeah, they didn't have the person to be the bad cop. That's what a real good manager is supposed to do, is be the bad cop for you so you get to keep your hands clean.
Right. I mean, and so many bands had that. Like Led Zeppelin had that famous manager that would like beat people up and hold them out of, you know, hotel windows and stuff. You have to have the heavy. You have to have the muscle and the heavy. It can't be the band. And so we do see Lips and a few times grabbing people by the neck, by their lapels and like shaking them. But man, when you're all the way in the Czech Republic and the guy's like going to give you some goulash for free but not pay you, that's just
insane. Okay, so I can speak to that from experience in the film of them getting lost for 2 hours in Prague trying to find a venue that's just like a former crypt or something. I've definitely gone through that, and I've definitely gone to my whole tour was like, it was just because I wanted to do it, essentially. No one in Europe seemed to care that it was going to be happening or who we were or anything. But a friend of ours was living in Prague and set up the show. But there was this phenomenon. It was like in this like the architecture in Prague is amazing, by the way. It's just worth going for that. But then trying to play the show in this weird like underground masonry. And then basically the guy who set everything up, not my friend, but the guy who was like the venue contact, was like, had gone like camping, and someone who had never done it before ended up doing our sound, and nothing was working at all. And I was trying to communicate with that person to the point he was like texting the guy on his camping trip, trying to explain how to run a soundboard. And I did not get in anyone's face and fight them about money, because I'm like, there's like 12 people here. This is like the best it's going to be. But I'm like, I at least need to be able to go through the PA. We are fucking like, we have no amps. Everything has to go DI. And then like, it's like, I was sitting with him at the board and the faders were like moving up and down by themselves. I was what is this? This is not designed for live sound. That's like what, if you're doing like Pro Tools or something, it'll do that. I'm like, why are the buttons just like fucking fading up and down, like ghost fading? I'm like, what is happening?
That is not cool.
Oh my God.
I have a similar story, but it was here in San Francisco. I was asked to run sound for just one night at the Velvet Lounge on Broadway, which packed in about 1,000 fucking people. And there was a band called the Wonder Bread 5 that just did cover songs of like black soul songs. And it was all white dudes in Afro wigs, first of all. Problem number one. Right. And then they dressed in horrible 70s outfits and didn't even actually play their own instruments. They had DAT tapes that played.
This dates the story. DAT tapes?
Yes.
You're running DAT tapes?
They were running DAT tapes. Yes. And so I had to mix all that. There was two people that actually played and the singer actually sang, and everything else was fake, including the horn section, even though they had three horn players. And I could not for the life of me figure out what the fuck had happened to the board from the night before, because I went in a few days before and arranged everything how I liked it. Someone else went in and I think mixed a bunch of DJs and removed and did everything differently. And I went in, I couldn't figure it out. So about two songs in, the lead singer got 1,000 people to look at me when I was up at the board and shout, "Sound guy, go home. Sound guy, go home." Because I couldn't figure out.
That's a bold move when you are completely a lip sync band. Just to like.
Yeah, exactly.
If you could at least be like, "Oh, like we're going to play up here and then figure out the rest." Like they depended on. Oh, man.
They couldn't play. They weren't even, some of them weren't even plugged in. And so then one of the band members ran across the street to a different bar, got their sound guy to come over, and then the sound guy on the microphone said, we have no idea what's wrong with this thing, I can't fix it, whatever. And then I left because I was like, fuck you guys. But I went to the owner and I was like, you still have to pay me, because that's bullshit.
The owner booked you and not the band didn't book you. Yeah, like that's, oh man, so many.
No, it was the owner booked me.
Oh my god.
Yeah
So live music, I mean, as much as we complain about it now, wouldn't it be nice to just go see the shittiest lip sync?
I would do it in a heartbeat
right now.
I would go see Wonder Bread 5 and I would let them just yell at me because I don't even care, without masks on, if we could. But it's live music that gives us fans like Cut Loose and Mad Dog, my friend.
Oh, yeah.
And they make the world go round.
The early Patreon guys. Fans, if ever there were.
oh, my God. Yes. Cut Loose and Mad Dog, dude. That's that little the bit.
I love that when they have that cut to Cut Loose. I'm like, is Cut Loose gonna give him 13,000 pounds? It's like, nah, you can just try to sell sunglasses at my call center.
so talk for the people who haven't seen the doc, like illustrate that scene.
Oh, right. So this is a guy who works as a driver for. He's just basically providing school lunches to all like the school districts in Toronto or outside of Toronto. And then one of their mega fans, a mega Anvil fan who you meet early on, it turns out he runs a telemarketing center that's trying to sell sunglasses. And everyone is like really like up, like, you know, getting real alpha male on it. And then Lips is just like, oh, I am a nice Jewish boy who's just a musician. You're gonna love these sunglasses. It's like Keanu Reeves wore in The Matrix. And that's the selling point of the sunglasses. So he does not make a single sale. And
he's
that's
horrible.
Pretty much like my experience telemarketing. I went in for like 3 weeks just because I know I'm gonna get paid for the training at the very least. So
I lasted a day. I was just like Lips. I lasted 8 hours. It was the most, I hated it so much. It was, it ran completely antithetical to what I do and what I believe in my DNA. I could not.
I was like my like sort of crowning achievement was possibly hooking a girl who was maybe like 13 into almost convincing her dad to like help save the pandas. And then, like, they're just kept, like, I think someone just popped up over my cubicle wall and did the finger spinning thing. Like, keep them going. Reel them in. I'm just like, it's a child. I'm talking to a child about pandas. Of course a child wants to say pandas. But yeah, I was just like, man, I maybe did it one more time after that. And I'm just like, it was like, but a lot of people that worked at that place had worked with Boots Riley at the other place that he based Sorry to Bother You on.
Oh,
yeah, a
wow.
lot of people I knew were like in the punk scene in the 90s all worked at this call center, and Boots Riley also worked there. And I think that was the origin of the concept for Sorry to Bother You, according to people I've talked to. I have not talked to Boots Riley about this, but I'm sure if I was like SDNA, he'd be like, yeah, SDNA.
That's the place. Yeah, it's so funny that Cut Loose, this crazy beard swilling, loud rock and roll metalhead Anvil fan, in the next scene that you see him has like this dress shirt on and is the vice president of this like multi-level marketing pyramid scheme place that sells sunglasses.
Did you ever see the movie 24 Hour Party People? Oh, yes. Yeah. Like, my favorite thing in there. Well, not my favorite thing. One of the things I always took away from that is, like, there was a guy who's just, like, a mailman who is, like, at all the shows. He's just, like, the local Manchester mailman who's just, like, a diehard punk. But it's just, like, a lifer. He's just, like, a lifer, a job guy, and then a punk on the side.
But those guys are always the ones that end up having the money, the house, the family, two cars, a vacation spot. Those are the guys that always get sneaky and end up like doing really well. It's almost never the band, the groupies, you know, the people that were cool when it was all happening, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I do think like the Young Anvil, they don't spend a lot of time on Young Anvil. I mean, the lyrics are pretty awful for the early Anvil stuff. I mean, I think like musically it holds together, but like the lyrics are just really asinine. From what I could tell. That might have been also a differentiator.
I think so. It's like they just like it's the difference between being good and great, you know, and they just weren't Metallica, who are great.
I mean, like, yeah, different styles completely, too. Right. Like Metallica did represent like a more thrash, like just a much harder sound.
Yeah.
But yeah, like they were like as metal as that type of metal could be in that time period, I guess.
Well, what I've learned, though, in art is never be first, man. Never be first.
Good point.
You will always lose. Always be second or third. Never be first, man.
Yeah.
If you have a great idea, sit on it until someone else tries it and they fuck up, and then use their shit and then build on it, and then you'll make a million.
I'd say the only exception is do be the first comedy documentary podcast. I think that is a place where you do want to be the first one and not the third.
Exactly. Or all the others are just cheap imitations. So one of my favorite scenes, there's a billion. The Transylvania Festival 2005 moment was pretty incredible. All the backstage stuff and Lips seeing all his ears. But so the guitar player and their horrible manager get married. Wow. Tatiana, and they get married, and they show Anvil playing 666 at the
wedding. Yeah, that's right. Like a little kid in a corner with the suit, like covering his ears.
Yeah. Oh my
God. It's like that sketch, so that funny SNL sketch with Dave Grohl and Fred Armisen. Do you remember that sketch? It's like a crisis of conformity, and it's just like instead of someone's blues funk band getting together at a wedding, it's like a hardcore band who's singing about like Alexander Haig and stuff. It's a very on point parody. It's a point where like he's like calling out all these like old Chicago people in the bit.
Yeah,
they have reminded me of that scene a little bit. Yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah, this documentary has just so much, and it's like it's all the themes. Like, let's talk about some themes, because I feel like Sasha did a great job of like stringing multiple themes together. Mm-hmm. You know, which I think this doc could have lived alone and done really well with just following a couple of them. But like the idea of perseverance is huge in this documentary. It's like it's so thematic in this, and it's interesting to note now that like Anvil's done well after this. Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of, because there's so many times that they're like, well, they're 50 and they're still doing it, and I love them, he's my brother, I'm gonna give him some money, God, I hope he does it, this is, you know. And then the other part is like Lips and Rob are just like, this is our time, this has to be our time. Like, we see this so much in documentaries. You know,
I feel like we see that in the mirror. I feel like that is I think the way I would have thought about this in 2008 versus now, when I'm like deep in being a middle-aged person, is very different. And I like a review. It wasn't a review of this, but it was about an article I found from Entertainment Weekly when this, around the time this came out, just about like documentaries. It was like, this is less about like a music scene and more about just aging. Right. It's like, it's like boyhood, right? It's like boyhood turning into like middle-aged manhood. It's very, it's just like, and it does feel like in a weird way, it's gendered in the sense of like the way the women in the film sort of deal with life is just like, well, that was my phase when I had a mullet and now I'm a mom. And it's like, it's like these men that kind of hold on to these fantasies, or in their case it was like very close to a reality for them, But
it was very close. But they still doing the Neverland Peter Pan thing. You know, no need to grow up. You know, just keep it alive, because there's this feeling. It's like they tied their entire success into being famous and making money.
Or their identities, right? Another classic. And anytime you see in real life someone from a band just wearing their own band's merch, that's always like,
right.
Like that's always a classic moment. I had a bingo for that. Sometimes I do it just because I've ran out of t-shirts, but come on. Like the Anvil toque, as they say, a beanie is like called the toque in Canada.
Yes.
Oh, also a lot of great sorries.
Sorry. I said I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Like just yelling
sorry.
At each other.
Come on, man! I said I'm sorry.
Yeah, the English countryside. You went really Liverpudlian on that one.
Hey, come on, man! I said I'm sorry. Yeah, it's just so amazing. I mean, and then it's like after it's all said and done, it's basically about the friendship, which is the grounding emotional target of Rob and Lips. You know, it's
like they're closer than their partners. They're closer than either of them are to their wives. And I think like people that have been in bands, like it's this bizarre thing that's very hard to quantify. It's like you have seen each other kind of at your worst moments.
Completely.
And you're kind of also. But
I've been having a weekly Zoom drink sessions with old bandmates when I was in the Boneless Children Foundation. And it's like my buddy, dude. Brian, the drummer, was like, well, what about that? You remember the time for like 2 years we didn't talk to each other? And I literally was like, no, I don't. I had no memory whatsoever. I'm like, we've always been good friends. He's like, no, we hated each other for like 2 years and refused to talk to each other.
And I'm like, oh, man.
I didn't even remember. I was like, oh, shit. And then he told me about it. And I was like, oh, no. Oh, that's
right. So I think I brought this up before. I've been in a band with actual brothers in it, and like I've seen a lot of blowups. I was in a band where it was two brothers, and then one of the brothers was dating the other person in the band. I was the only, and I lived with one. Like we all had a relationship to each other, but they were all like competing relationships essentially. Oh. I was like,
Jesus.
Yeah, no, I've also been in a band with a married couple that got divorced and were still in the band together. I've been in so many like of these scenarios.
Were you in Fleetwood Mac?
Weird. I kind of end up being third wheel in a lot of situations, or seventh wheel occasionally. It's been, oh man.
Oh my God. That sounds horrific. Okay. So we're going to rate this movie on 1 to 10 shitty managers. I love Anvil. It's one of my all time favorite documentaries. I'm giving it 10 out of 10 shitty managers. How about,
I mean, I wish I could give them good managers because that's what they really need. I mean, like having,
but 10,
I'll tell you, like having Lips run your band is having 10 shitty managers. So I'm going to give it 10 shitty managers. Hopefully they've got management by now. The tour, the running around the train stations and not being able to get on the train. I'm like, oh, I never thought that, like, cause I thought I made a mistake by touring Europe in a rental car, but I'm like, I'm kind of glad I did that after watching that. I'm like, that actually was a better move.
Not just once, but like two or three times, or at least there's probably more. We just see that in the dock, though, just a few times.
I don't even get what's happening because they're missing trains and they have a van. So they're like kind of get the worst of both worlds. They're paying for a lot. Oh, man. Tatiana, I mean, just, oh, man.
So in the ending credits, we see that she was about to tour manage the Scorpions.
To go to Taiwan, which is like
hoping to get into opera.
Yeah. Oh, man. You know, power to her. I mean, also, that was another thing. Have you been on a tour with someone where one person is dating someone else who's like not in the band, but is like helping the band?
No. Yes. Yeah. I mean, I haven't had too many horrible band relationship interpersonal stuff, but
I've like never dated someone I'm in a band with or anything, thankfully. But
I was in a sketch comedy group with a couple, and they were both AA. They met in AA, and it was the worst thing I'd ever ever had to be a part of or even witness. They would both scream at each other and then go to separate corners and scribble in notebooks and then look at each other and growl. And then like they would scribble in notebooks and we'd be like, can we keep the rehearsal going? And they're like, we have to do this. It's part of our program.
Well, Paco, I do want to say, if we're still doing this podcast after 30 years, it's fine if we quit. Just someone else tell us it's been long enough. You've done the work. You don't need to keep going.
My sister will give us money to keep going.
Well, if your sister will give us the money, then I'll keep doing it.
All right. So there we go. So Anvil, do it. Watch it. Support these guys. It's interesting that apparently on the 4th of July of this year, they're going to be part of the first Canadian metal streaming event ever.
Them in like Voivod or something. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's this coming up 4th of July. I guess Anvil has a new song out celebrating Canada's legalization of marijuana. And that became kind of a hit.
Oh.
So this is timely. This is very timely. Okay, so let's talk about Pitch a Doc. Do you want to take us through a doc that you would like to see me make?
Yeah, I was thinking about this last time. I had it on the tip of my tongue last time, and I somehow forgot. So this time I was thinking actually that it would be a very interesting documentary about Patrice Cullors, who is like one of the people that started Black Lives Matter. My wife actually told me about her originally and we saw her speak before, but she became like a performance artist in the last few years, like went to grad school for performance art. So there's like a lot, it's a really interesting person and interesting story of like someone who like is, you know, a major part of like a social movement that is going on now and is also taking this other, like is somehow integrating and living in this sort of world between and bridging like activism and performance art. I mean, and she's still very young. So, I mean, this could be done over several years. You probably, you know, capture a lot of stuff and put a really interesting thing together. But yeah, still very active person. I would say look her. She wrote a memoir that came out, I think, 4 years ago. So yeah, I'd say check out Patrice Cullors and someone should make a documentary about her.
That's awesome. Yeah, that would be amazing. I'd love to watch that. I'd like to see a documentary about Fatty Arbuckle because I'm a big fan.
Yeah. It fits into what's happening right now. Is that why you thought of it?
Why I thought of it because it's not true.
Oh, it's not
his.
Okay.
No, we've all been fed a lie. But anyways, that's for the doctor.
Oh, yeah, because it happened in San Francisco, right?
It happened at the St. Francis Hotel.
Okay.
Yeah, the famous story. And I'm a big fan. I read I Fatty, which is a great book. And there was a time that me and Harmon Leon were writing a one-man show where I was going to play Fatty Arbuckle. And it never really took off. But I'm pretty fascinated by his entire story. Fatty Arbuckle in 1906, 07, 08 was making over $1 million a year.
Wow.
Making movies.
Jeez.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
Oh.
That's insane amount of money for the early 1900s.
Yeah.
But his career was like completely destroyed because these people wanted him destroyed. They didn't like the fact that he was making that kind of money and he was a partier and they didn't like it. That's awesome. That is Pitch a Doc. Is there anything coming up that you're excited for? Docs, movies, books, whatevs?
No. I haven't seen enough stuff recently. Do you see anything looks appealing to you?
There's a couple docs that are coming up. I saw that Sasha Gervasi, the director of Anvil, is making a biopic about Boy George.
Oh,
that's okay. Coming out. So maybe we could do that for Biopsy.
Yeah.
That would be kind of cool. I am very, very excited about Jamie Foxx's biopic about Mike Tyson.
Oh yeah. I've heard you. Yeah. He's bulking up for that.
I saw some pictures and he's like huge. I mean, Mike Tyson was he was like a pit bull. He was so, you know, so yeah, he's put on a lot of muscle for that. And it's just like, I love that kind of, those kind of stories. And I was a huge Mike Tyson fan when I was, you know, my 20s.
Yeah.
And so looking forward to that. I love Jamie Foxx too. That guy is so freaking talented. Like Ray is such a great movie. Yet another biopsy we could do, you know. Okay, so SupDoc news and updates. That's my news sound. Bip, 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 bip. All ships at sea. SupDoc news. Hey.
Oh, yeah. Is that, well, this is interesting. We were, I know, after all that lead up, I'm just like, what are you talking about? Oh, we found that we were at one point number 72 in film reviews on Apple, which is breaking the top 200 is rare enough, but somehow that happened. I know, like, we got some listens in like Denmark. We got a couple. I mean, maybe it's because we talked about the Noma restaurant. That could have been some of it.
Maybe.
But I think it's mostly probably our friend Andreas, who lives in Denmark. I'm pretty sure it's Andreas.
Thank you, Andreas.
Thank you, Andreas. And then, a couple countries we do well in, but it was surprising overall to get...
Australia loves us.
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, you know...
They love
English.
Us in
They
Australia.
Love documentaries in Australia, so it totally makes sense.
You know what I've been seeing on our analytics is that lots of people have been listening to the Adam Faylor
interview. That makes sense.
Yeah,
just because it's like Jawbreaker has fans everywhere. That's probably what it is.
Oh, okay.
And also it's about Kurt Cobain and that no one's going to stop talking about that guy.
That's true.
Oh,
that is
speaking
true.
Of Kurt Cobain, this is not a news item about a documentary. Someone ran all of Nirvana's lyrics through an AI and produced a new Nirvana song. I can put a link. Man. I got to put a link to this in the show notes. It's like the music is just kind of like a mishmash of other Nirvana songs, but the lyrics are just like I think that the chorus is like, "I learned to shoot his gun. I'm doing all right, mosquitoes," or something like that. That's basically what the song lyrics are like.
Wow, it sounds just like him. I was writing a new bit about how Kurt Cobain would be a Trumper now.
Oh,
you know,
did you want to give us more of that bit?
It's just like he'd be 50. He'd be 51, 52 right now. He'd be rich and famous, and he'd be a conservative, and he'd be kind of a libertarian now. I mean, can't you just see it? He'd be like, fuck that sweater days of MTV Unplugged. Like, I was a stupid kid doing smack, you know, like now it's about.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you saw that Chris Novoselic from Nirvana did say Trump
That's
did a
right.
good job.
That's
so
right.
That's as close as of an experience as that will be. Like pretty much like I think in the same day like that happened and then the Magic Castle got shit for like letting the cops park there. So I'm just like, we just lost the Magic Castle in Nirvana to the cancel gods. So there we go.
And some Christopher Columbus statues, thank God. Yeah. All right. So George, this was awesome. Anvil, watch it. People can watch it on Amazon Prime. You can buy it still. I think that's the only place I saw that it was streaming.
Yep.
But I am super glad we did this because I love this doc. And this has been fun. We're going through some classic. We're doing classic bite-size episodes with some classic docs. And I'm thrilled. So anything else?
Nah, man. We got a lot of documentaries to watch. That's all I got to say. There's so many.
We do. And if people are listening, hit us up on social media. Let us know what docs we should be doing, what guests we should be having. If you like the show, if you don't like the show, whatever. Let us know what's happening. We got Nick is here, producer, intern. Thank you so much, Nick, for helping us out. And we'll
check
talk
us
to you
out
soon.
On,
keep watching.
Check out
docs.
Our Patreon. Patreon SupDoc Podcast.
Hey, thanks for listening. You can find out more about SupDoc at supdocpodcast.com.
We've been recapping reality since 2015.
Our theme song was written by David Siegel, and our show was engineered by Will Scoville.
For as little as $1 a month, you can donate to this show through our Patreon page, patreon.com/supdocpodcast.
If you want to help us out in other ways, please share the show with friends. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts.
Find out more about Paco and George's comedy gigs on the About Us page on our website.
SupDoc is by doc fans for doc fans. So if you want to advertise with SupDoc, got a film you want to recommend, or any opinions, please hit us up.
Email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com.